Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
I'm not going 4 hours without just getting bored or just stopping to pee or something.
Hello and welcome back to the Plugged In Podcast, a weekly news show from Inside EVs all about the future of transportation. I'm Tim Levin.
And I'm Matt Hogan.
On this week's show, Faraday Future is back in the news. Remember them? Sony's EV project is dead. And we talk about how much range you really need.
So let's get started. So you did this story for the site this week where you looked at the rise of 300-mile EVs and how that's kind of become the norm, right? And I think it brings up a good question, which is like, cars are getting better, ranges are getting longer, you know, but how much do people like really need? Because we're starting to see these 400-mile EVs coming, and it's kind of a question, right? Like, is the industry going to stop at like 300 being the benchmark, or where there'll always be this push for like 400 mile EVs and then even more?
Yeah. I think it does bring up exactly that. I think first, maybe some history, because this was interesting. So the Tesla Model S P100D was the first EV ever rated for 300 miles of range. The like deep EV nerds listening to the show will be like, yeah, duh.
That was the last Tesla press car I ever got back when they still had a Tesla.
P100D?
Yeah, it was a P100D, and it was in 2017, and it was like, oh my God, this thing is crazy.
Yeah, that thing was sick. I never drove one, but I've heard. That was in 2016. By the 2025 model year, I counted 43 different EVs available with at least 300 miles of range, and that's only growing. Despite all the cancellations we're hearing about, that is still growing. By the end of this year, there should be around 60 different EVs available with over 300 miles of range. And when I was reporting this story, I was really reminded of, maybe this is kind of like a palate cleanser from last week's episode where we talked about how many cars are not happening or are getting axed. There are actually a lot of really cool and long range and high quality cars that are still coming out this year. That go into this 300-mile category. Toyota Highlander, Rivian R2, Mercedes, GLC, and GLB, which I completely like missed the news. Like, that's how many of these we have coming. I completely had missed the news that there was a new GLB coming, like a really quite impressive, smaller, more compact Mercedes SUV.
Yeah, that one flew under the radar. I don't know why.
Completely, yeah. That one, I don't remember exactly, but it's like well over 300 miles of range is supposed to be in that one, and that's like a small SUV. Genesis GV90 is something that they haven't officially announced, but is like strongly rumored to be coming out this year. We're going to get a Mitsubishi based on the Nissan Leaf, the Cayenne Electric. There's just a lot of new EVs coming out that are above that
Cayenne Electric. I did a range test
benchmark.
70 miles per hour, and we did 350 miles at 70 miles an hour. So, I mean, that's going to be very high 300s, which is pretty sick.
Yeah, that's awesome. So between all that, the market is really settling somewhere around 300 miles for everything from these higher end Cayenne type EVs to entry level stuff like the $30,000 Nissan Leaf. And the top end of the market, as you mentioned, is pushing things even higher. The iX3, the BMW iX3, the BMW i3, the Volvo EX60 are all supposed to have at least 400 miles of range when they go on sale this year and next year. It's kind of the start. Like, when you look at what sort of cars used to get 400 miles of range versus these new ones, it's kind of a turning point, I think. It's kind of the start of a new era where historically, 400-mile EVs were always two categories of cars. These really aerodynamic, quite expensive sedans, like the Model S, Lucid Air, getting like 400 or 500 miles of range. And then like gigantic full-size SUVs and pickup trucks, like the Chevy Silverado and the Cadillac Escalade, that did it by like brute force, just with a huge like 170 or 200 kilowatt hour battery.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're starting to see it. iX3, i3, Volvo EX60. These are like kind of the core of the American car market. These are like more, you know, midsize crossovers and a sedan.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows that, yeah, like 400, 300 is kind of the new benchmark. Now 400 is definitely moving. It's like trickling down into other segments, which is cool to see. But I guess I'll put it to you back. Like, where do you think EV range is going? Do you think it's kind of leveling out, or is it going to just, you know, is the next, the 20, whatever, 30 something Nissan Leaf, yeah, like, is that going to have 400 miles? Are we just always going to be pushing higher?
Yeah. I mean, I have a couple thoughts on this. The first is that there's this weird back and forth when we talk about range where you both don't need as much as you think for most of the time, and you do need a lot more than I think even a lot of EV fans recognize for these longer trips. So the first thing is, yeah, that you don't do that many road trips. Most people don't, you know, especially now, again, I'm from the Midwest. We grew up driving like 9 hours to the beach every year, and then we'd take 14-hour trips to down to Hilton Head from Cleveland, and like, that exists. That's a real thing. But those were once a year trips, or, you know, if we were going to visit family in New York, it would be two or three times a year. And so you don't take that many road trips. However, when you are on road trips, the mileage requirements kind of stack up in a way that I wasn't expecting. So, for instance, my car is a Blazer EV. It has like 278 miles of range, which I thought is more than enough, because 278 miles at 70 miles per hour, that works out to 4 hours of driving. And like, I'm not going 4 hours without just getting bored or just stopping to pee or something.
Yeah.
And then at that point, you're almost to meal times. And like, okay, so you can do one 20-minute stop and 200 miles. And then, you know, a little bit later, get your lunch or your dinner. But in reality, it doesn't really work that way, right? Because number one, you're not using 100% of the battery. You're charging from 10 to 80% at your stop. So that first drive, you might get, you know, if you charge up at home to 100%, you get 90% of the battery, assuming you charge time your charge point perfectly. Then from there on, you're just using 70% of the battery. So already, yeah, you get to like 70% of the battery. 70, you know, 0.7 times 1 or 278 is 198 miles, or wait, sorry, 195 miles, which is like, that's getting a little bit tight. And then when you factor in that, like, EPA range figures are not highway range figures. They're 55% city and 45% highway, which, mm-hmm, I think most people don't understand. There's a lot of headlines that are like, this car beat its range or underperformed its EPA range on the highway. It's a different test. It's measuring different things. And we know EVs are less efficient on the highway. And so when you factor in the range efficient, or the, you know, the real highway range plus that 0.7 number, when I drove my car round trip like 1,300 miles to Utah, I was stopping like every 150, 160 miles, which, that's not enough. I was annoyed. I could go further than that. And then it didn't help that my car has relatively long charging stops. So I do think like 350 miles of highway range is sort of where in my head I would want. Now, I don't know how much of that is you always want a little more than you have versus like that, mm-hmm, is the real number. But the way I put it is like, okay, so if you have 350 miles, when you set out at 100%, you have 315 miles before you need to stop when you have like the longest stint. And then from there on, it's like every 250 miles, which is 3.5 hours. I think that's totally fair, as long as you can get that to be your actual highway number, because then you factor in when it's the winter, it's going to be worse. Although the winter range penalty isn't quite as bad as people think, because a lot of the range penalty comes from heating up initially. So as you go longer, it's not as bad. So that's kind of my thinking on it. I think 300-ish miles is good enough for most people most of the time with good charging. And I think I've already seeing, it's going to be a luxurious experience to have more range, right? It's going to cost a lot of money to get a bigger battery, but it is like, that's the luxury experience. What do you think? Where do you think it should end up?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think I largely agree. I think 350 of highway is like, I think that's an overestimate of what people need. Like,
yeah,
I go from like, okay, you want to travel like 70 miles an hour. You maybe want to stop. You're probably not stopping you're probably not going any more than like 3 hours, right? So that's 210 miles of highway range. And then you add in like a buffer on either side because you're not going to zero or,
yeah,
charging to 100%. You add in a buffer because highway miles eat up the battery faster. And like, yeah, you're looking at like somewhere between 300 and 350, right? Like 320,
yeah,
or something like that. Seems perfectly fine,
yeah,
especially if you have a pretty fast charge. Like, I think,
yeah, And frequent charging Hyundais and Kias availability.
Right, exactly. I think the Hyundais and Kias already, like, pretty much are, I mean, and it goes to show, like, they are very popular. And the Teslas, too. Like, these all have roughly that, like, a little over 300 miles. They charge pretty quickly, and they seem to be what people want. Like, that seems to already satisfy most people's needs.
Yeah.
I think the charging is a huge, huge part of it. Like, we got a lot of good comments on this, both from, like, posting this on LinkedIn, on social media, and on our site. And a lot of people were like, over 300 miles, what I care more about is charging speed. And yeah. I think I'd add to that, like, charging availability, right?
Right.
I think once you're not worried about range, anything above that is kind of gravy. It's like, you probably don't need it. And whether you're not worried about it because you just have a ton of range, or because there are charging stations everywhere, or both, it doesn't really matter. I think I think that starts to happen a little over 300. You're like, well, as long as I know I can drive basically as long as I kind of want to, and then just pull over and charge just like I do with gas, I think that's going to be the point where people are like, oh yeah, I don't actually need, why would I need 450 miles?
Right.
If, like, you know, you don't think about it in your gas car. You just stop when you need to fuel and you just keep going.
Yeah. And I think that's a big part of it too. Once you get down to those 15 to 20 minute stops, I think people even think that they're stopping at the gas station for 5 minutes. But when you factor in there's a line for the bathroom, and then you're picking out your snacks, and then you're stopping for 12 to 20 minutes anyway.
For sure.
I do think it's interesting though, on, like, the Hyundai front, like, those cars charge really well, but I did a road trip to Vegas and back in a Hyundai Ioniq 5 XRT, which only, the XRT model is like the off-roady one, so it only gets 259 miles of range. And I still found myself annoyed by, it was more that, yeah, the charging stations weren't always perfectly aligned with where my, like, stop would be. And then obviously, like, a lot of that, you're crossing from San Diego to Vegas, you're doing a lot of time just out in the open desert. And then throughout that trip, I went down to, like, the Hoover Dam. I went to, you know, a hike to Hot Springs. And then me and our photo editor met out in the desert for some. So I was doing a lot of things that were kind of far away from, like, primary infrastructure. They were further off the highway. And I did find it just that I was having to stop more often than I would like. But yeah, if once we get to the point where that, a lot of that was I was going out of my way to find the chargers, right? And so if we got rid of that, which I think we're very much well on track to do, like, if I'm driving within the state of California, I don't really think about charger availability much. Mm-hmm. Like, I know there's going to be an option. And if that option, for whatever reason, doesn't work, I know there's going to be another option nearby. Yeah, and I think people don't really, I've had a lot of people tell me, they like, oh, we need 500-mile EVs for this to take off. I don't think we do at all, in terms of, not only, you know, are you not road tripping as often as you think, but then when you factor in, you know, if you have a car that has 100 miles of range, and then you upgrade to one that has 200 miles of range, you're now charging half as often. That's a big upgrade, right? And then, okay, 200 to 300 miles. Now you're cutting your stops by, or sorry, you're cutting it by 100%. Then 200 to 300 miles, you're cutting it by 50%. Then 300 to 400 miles, you're cutting. So there's diminishing returns here, where the longer you stretch it out, the less you're actually benefiting. And then the more energy you're using just hauling that big battery around. So I think we're going to see the market kind of shift towards, like, there will always be people who want the most of everything, right? There are people, I mean, there are trucks that offer 36-gallon gas tanks for people who work in really remote areas. There, like, that is a market that exists. There are the traveling salesman types, whatever, the hotshots who are going to be trucking things across. There is going to be a market for super high range vehicles, but I don't think the average person is going to shake out with anything more than 300 to 350. Like, I feel like that, you know, I look at cars like the Cadillac Lyriq, which are very similar to my Blazer EV, but offer just a slightly bigger battery that offers like 315 miles of range. So I'm like, that difference right there, that like 35 miles, I think is enough that I would be totally happy. I would occasionally be like, oh, you know, that it's not lined up in the exact right place. But yeah, I think that would be totally fine. And then in the luxury market, you're going to see more of that longer range stuff. But even that eventually will collapse down, because the battery is the number one driver of how much the car costs. And so, you know, are you really going to pay an extra $3,000-$4,000 for an extra like 20 minutes twice a year? Like, especially when we're looking at these charge times that are going to mostly end up, I would think, below 25 minutes. Already we're well on our way to that. I just don't think most people, their time isn't that valuable. It's mostly the fear that's driving this. And as that evaporates, I think the need for more and more will start to go away.
Yeah, totally. I was thinking about that. Like, I think probably in the near term, we'll see this, you know, the kind of divide happening that we're already seeing, where I bet you're going to see most mainstream EVs land at or over 300, just because that makes sense. And that's kind of where it's already going. And then maybe you'll see the luxury market pushing more like 375, 400 plus. But then eventually, like right now, that's a luxury because people are worried about charging, because people don't really know, you know, people are anxious about EVs. You also have legitimate reasons for people to want, like you said, more range. Like if you live somewhere cold, you live somewhere like mountainous, like you just need a bigger buffer than somebody like us who lives like in California.
Yeah.
But I do think as there's more charging, that just won't be a luxury anymore, right? Like at a certain point, like there's a reason that we don't have, I guess you just said there are some of those 36 gallon trucks, but like in general, it's not like your BMWs have a bigger gas tank than other cars, just because like it's the same. You just you fill up whenever you need to.
And the handling benefits and the efficiency benefits of having a lighter vehicle are going to be easier to sell on than just like infinite range. Because they get like one crazy side note on this, by the way, is I've started to see gas car ads that advertise their range, which never exists. Yes, or hybrids. They're like, oh,
it's
over
like
700
Honda
miles.
It's like the Honda hybrid with over 700 miles of range. I'm like, wow, that's,
who cares?
It is an interesting thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just interesting because they're clearly needling on EV range anxiety, but it's like, this literally was not a selling point up until right now. But I also think just one really easy thing we could do to help get people over range anxiety is like, the fact that EPA estimates are a mix of city and highway, I think is really working against us, because there's so many headlines out there that's like, oh, this car really underperformed its range, where we start to think that like we can't trust range. And it's like, no, electric cars are very consistent in how efficient they are in certain environments, but the environment we need to test them for is the environment where you're going to use range. And like around the city, nobody really cares like how many miles it's going to be, because the city environment is so, you know, that you're always going to have access to charging infrastructure. The time where you need range is on the highway. And so I think it's a huge regulatory failure that we just don't have on the car. It says, okay, here's what it does in the city. Here's what it does combined. Here's what it does on the highway, like it does on a gas car. It's more important for electric cars. And so if we just had that and you knew, like if I got in my car and it said, you know, hey, I have 278 miles of range, and if you're going straight on the highway, I have 220 miles of range, it would be really, really easy to plan my trips. But because we have to infer all of those things from, you know, crowdsourced data, it's really noisy, and it doesn't have to be. And I think that is going to come. It just may take a minute.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really smart idea. Like they already have windows. The window sticker has to have, if you're in, you know, certain, if you're not like a hugely heavy car, like some of the old GMC Hummers and stuff.
Yeah.
You need to have the EPA range and MPGE on the window sticker.
Yeah.
So yeah, it should totally have city range, highway range, and combined. Because I mean, I was thinking, you were saying that, and I was like, well, I can see why they don't want that, because the highway figure for a lot of cars is going to be like, you know, it's going to be 25% less or whatever.
Yeah, but better to put that than to disappoint people when they actually do it.
But the city figure will be great. Like if you're saying, you know, okay, you get 200 miles on the highway, you have 400 miles city and 300 miles combined. Like, I think a lot of, maybe that would click with people where they're like, oh, so like most of the time I don't have to worry.
Yeah.
And the times that I do seems like it's probably good enough too.
Yeah. And like, if it disappoints people to see the real range, like then they're not ready, and that's okay. Like we shouldn't just be so, you know, we shouldn't be advocating so hard that we don't want people to make informed decisions. The people that I know that are anti-EV, if they've ever, like 90% of people I've ever met that have owned an EV only want to own EVs from here out. And the people who got burned are the people who are like, oh, nobody told me about my charging situation at home. Nobody told me about the range. Nobody told me about the cold weather stuff. Like people who don't know and then get negatively surprised, they're a lot harder to win over than people who are just like, oh, hey, you know what? That doesn't work for me right now. So yeah, I think, you know, you want to make sure you don't overpromise and underdeliver, which is a nice segue into our next topic, which I want to talk about. One of our favorite companies, one of my favorite companies, Faraday Future, which always keeps things interesting. Now,
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The reason we're talking about it this week is Sean O'Kane from TechCrunch had a great scoop last weekend that the Securities and Exchange Commission, which investigates, you know, crimes related to the stock market, has dropped its four-year-old investigation into this company, which was over alleged false and misleading statements related to when they went public through a special purpose acquisition company, a SPAC merger. So sort of a weird financial vehicle companies use to get to an IPO, a public offering on the stock market, without needing to go through all of the rigorous process of going public on your own. So there was some allegation that they, you know, had some false and misleading statements related to that. But despite them sending Wells notice, or despite the fact that the staff at the SEC recommended that they file charges against this company, suddenly this investigation was dropped and it's going away. So Tim, why don't you brief us quickly on, like, why does this matter?
Yeah, I mean, partially it matters because I wanted an excuse for us to just talk about Faraday Future, because it's, I mean, you know, like, I don't want to be overly critical or anything, but like, it's become a deeply strange company. Like, it started as one of these Tesla killer, Tesla rivals in the mid 2010s with the FF91. And then it just kind of like, it's gotten real weird from there. Yeah. But this is a startup that's been trying to gain traction in the EV space for about a decade. Clearly having an SEC investigation hanging over you is not what you want. That doesn't help. They were very happy about this. They like posted videos being like, we're finally free.
Yeah.
there was an awesome, like, there's a photo of YT, of the founder and CEO, like staring off into the sunset.
There's more to that story, which I'll get into in a sec too.
Yeah. But yeah, like you said, this is a surprise because Faraday Future executives, according to TechCrunch, had already received what are known as Wells notices. These are formal notices that the SEC is probably going to bring action against you. Historically, according to studies, the vast majority of people who receive Wells notices end up with charges. It's like 80 or 85%, depending on where you look. But this administration has drastically cut back on SEC enforcement. And so this is kind of in keeping with that pattern. The SEC also closed its case against Fisker not too long ago. I mean, and in general, like the SPAC, the kind of SPAC boom, it led to a lot of, I think there were Faraday isn't the only company that was investigated after this period.
Right. It wasn't when Nikola a lot of also these, like, a SPAC very, IPO?
Yeah, exactly. There were a lot of these very early stage companies with no revenue that were able to go public and raise money via SPAC without a lot of oversight. And there have been myriad issues with these companies. Yeah.
Turns out, like, all those regulatory filings that you do when you go public are like pretty important for disclosing where the business is.
So you've actually spent time with Faraday Future. You went to one of their events, I think it was last year.
It's weird. So I've been to two events. The first was a sit down with them after CES in 2025. Yeah, so last year. And then in the summer, I also went to the launch of the Faraday X Super One, which was also weird. So let me just back up and say, So the company starts in like, they first get on our radar in like 2016 when they announce at CES, we're going to make this FF91. It's going to be this like cutting edge, you know, electric car, all 1,000 horsepower, just like crazy. Then in 2017, they brought like a production intent version that they said was going to arrive in 2018, go 0 to 60 in 2.39 seconds. So faster than a Model S P100D at the time. And the whole thing was like, there was a lot of excitement. They were talking about, you know, autonomy stuff, but also clouded by a question that's hung over a lot of EV startups, you know, for instance, Fisker and other ones of like, is this real or is this kind of vaporware? And Faraday Future specifically has had a lot of stuff that made us, I don't want to get into legally murky territory, but there was a lot of things that just made us question them. So part of it is like at the center of it all is this guy, YT Jia. He makes all of his money as the founder of a conglomerate. I believe it's called Le Echo, L-E Echo. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, in China. And big consumer tech conglomerate, wants to get into the EV space. But throughout this process, he's also like been pretty deep in debt in China, was basically persona non grata back in the country for a little bit because all of his debtors were coming after him. There's a lot of weird twists and turns to this story. I can't get into all the details. At one point, Evergrande, which if you know that name, you know it's the giant property company in China that collapsed in a way that almost brought down the entire real estate speculation bubble there. Just, it's really weird. And so when I met with them after CES, you know, when this was, they had already delivered some FF91s. I did get to drive an FF91. Now they cost like $300,000. Most of them have been delivered to like their influencer network, which includes a bizarre list of people.
I'm sorry, did you just call it an influencer network?
Yeah.
Don't you like, mean the Futurist Alliance?
Right, the Futurist Alliance, yes. Which includes people like, I believe, Chris Brown, one of the Bald
Mariah
Brothers
Carey.
From Selling Sunset. It's just it's a weird mix of people. And so when I talked to them in, I believe it was January last year, like YTGO was nowhere to be found. Big questions of like what was going on in his whole regulatory life. Part of it was his personal debt had led to people being able to take shares of Faraday, which then all of that apparently was cleared up. At the time, they're like, he's free of that. It's not affecting the company anymore. Then in the summer, I went to the Faraday X reveal, which was like, so they're going to have a sub brand that is now targeted at a wider spread demographic. It's a plug-in hybrid minivan. They call it the first AI MPV. I don't think anyone would dispute that. Although at one point I did ask like what AI features it has, and they're like, they talked a lot about how their use of AI is going to be so transformative. And I was like, what AI features is it going to have? And they're like, driver assistance tech and a voice assistant. I'm like, okay, so like every EV on sale. And then,
well, weren't they like, well, it can tell you, you know, you can ask it things,
yes,
about like the day's news.
So yes, then I was sitting in the back of the car with an Engadget reporter, Carissa Bell, who's very talented. And we were in the back of an FF91, and they were like, look, like when you watch a YouTube video on it, like a CNBC video, because there was a title of a company in the title of the video, the car just like put up a stock ticker related to that company using a large language model, which would be maybe kind of interesting or good, except Carissa nicely noticed that was not the stock ticker, or that was not the stock price of the company, and had not been the stock price of that company at any time in the last year. So it had just sort of seen a company name and hallucinated what a stock chart might look like for that company. And that felt like very just apt for what the hell was going on that day. But the car, I drove one of the cars. They exist. It's a real thing. The FF91.
You're talking about— yeah, the 91, the $300,000 X.
Yeah, and so now this minivan, it's a plug-in hybrid minivan. It's a rebadge of a Chinese MPV, although I don't think we know exactly which one. I think there's some suggestion it's a Great Wall Motors car, I believe. Yeah, and they revealed it at this event with like a bajillion paid influencers, a lot of crazy hype. YT was there. And yeah, and now they're saying next year it's going to go on sale. It's going to be built in California. And like a new luxury transportation idea. That's the plan. It's like a big, sort of like the Mercedes van, but like Chinese and with a face on it that you can put custom logos on, like on the front.
Yeah, like a screen that takes up the whole grill.
Yeah, yeah. It's, so it's bizarre. But so with all that, I mean, what's your read on the current state of the company? Like, do you think this is real? Do you think this is coming out this year? What do you think?
They have posted about, like, they're coming into the U.S. as knockdown kits, right? So they come as, like,
yeah,
the car not fully built, and then they have to put it together. And they apparently are taking delivery of these things, and they started pre-production and stuff. So it seems like they're intending to actually do this. What strikes me is that they, I feel like, are kind of the last of the, I guess, except for like Rivian and Lucid. This is one of the last of the EV startups of that era. Many of the other ones have either gone to Rivian and Lucid level, where they like actually make cars and, you know, are like actually a business. And then you have like Lordstown and Fisker and Canoe.
Right.
And Nikola. All of, like, it's been a huge wipeout of basically everything that came about in that mid-2010s era. And Faraday is kind of, you know, to their credit, somehow,
still
like, they're still here, and they're still trying to sell cars, still trying to sell the FF91.
Yeah.
What strikes me is, like, every time I go on the internet, I see a new announcement from them that is, like, not about cars. Like, they're expanding into other things. They have moved into crypto.
Yeah, of course.
Some like side venture.
Also, notably, the whole release about just rebranding the stock as FFAI, which just
The company is now called FFAI. They, now that there's this like robot sort of craze, they say that they're selling, they've launched a robot business where they're selling, again, like rebadged, white labeled Chinese like humanoid and dog looking robots. They say this is like they're selling them to Airbnb hosts and hotels, I guess, so they can be like little, you know, butlers or something.
Okay.
It's just such a weird, it's such a weird company.
Yeah, I mean, other companies too, you either, like, if the question, are you vaporware, seems like it can be answered quickly of like, do you get a real product to market? And like, you know, it's like Nikola falls apart because it didn't work. And then Rivian and Lucid are real. And I just think Faraday has had this unbelievable ability for 10 straight years to just be in this like weird spot where we can't say that it's not happening, right? Because they're doing stuff. They have people and events and stuff.
They deliver a car every once in a while. They like, they say that this famous person just took delivery of this car.
Right.
They have technically this new line of the minivans coming out.
Yeah, and so it's like they keep renewing the promises and upgrading the promises with their AI and crypto plays, but it does reek of like this company is just willing to be whatever investors want it to be at that time with not real demonstrated competency in any of these things yet. I mean, and they also, like, the Super One's not going to be it. They say Faraday X is going to have a bunch of products. I don't know. it's weird.
Yeah, I agree. We should keep our eye on this. I think maybe we should do like a whole episode maybe about Faraday, or maybe about Faraday and the kind of other startups from that period.
Yeah.
We could have Sean on and
that'd be great.
Kind of go through this company, because there's a lot that we couldn't get to today. Now let's move on to another, I guess, quasi EV startup. We get to take a little bit of a victory lap, although maybe a little bit of a sad one. Last week on the show, we predicted that the Sony Honda Afeela The Sony Honda Afeela would get the axe next. Lo and behold, on Wednesday, that's exactly what happened. This morning, as we record this, Sony Honda announced that the Afeela 1 and then the SUV that was going to come after that both are no longer happening. It's sad for this company. It's sad for, I'm sure, the smart people who work there. But we can't say we didn't see this coming, especially after Honda's news, right? Last week, Honda pulled the plug on, or maybe it was before last week, a couple weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, Honda pulled the plug on all of its future Zero Series EVs, this whole electric platform. Sony
for the
was
U.S. market ones, at least.
For the U.S. market.
Yeah.
Sony was going to share that platform and also build its EVs in Ohio in the same factory. And so there you go. Now that's not happening.
Yeah.
Statement from Sony Honda. They basically said this is exactly why, right? They said that as a result of Honda's reassessment of its automobile electrification strategy, Sony Honda Mobility will not be able to utilize certain technologies and assets that were originally planned to be provided by Honda. In light of this change, Sony Honda Mobility has determined that it does not have a viable path forward to bringing these models to market. So this kind of joins the Apple car in the graveyard of failed automotive efforts from tech companies. What's remarkable is how close this was to production. Like, the Apple car never was a thing. It was always like a secret. This was supposed to come out this year.
They were building prototypes like on the line.
They were building prototypes. They had dealerships, or they had storefronts coming up. They had parties like preparing the public for this thing. They had ads all over my YouTube.
Yep.
And now it's just not happening. I mean, I guess I should say, like, they did mention in this release that they're exploring, they're continuing to explore options or whatever. Yep. They didn't say they're shutting the whole company down, but right now they have no models that are coming out. What are your initial thoughts on this, Mac? I mean, we kind of covered last week Sony Honda. But what do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, I was looking back at this piece I wrote after CES last year, where I, after that, I spoke to the president of Sony Honda Mobility. Smart guy and obviously passionate, but I think the headline I used was like, they can't really explain why you would buy this thing. Because I put this question to the guy of like, you know, these specs, it was like 300 miles of range, 150 kilowatt fast charging, like things that were just like, that weren't particularly impressive in 2018, and they sure as hell aren't flagship quality now. And I was like, you know, the car charges slower than a Tesla Model S. It doesn't go as far and it costs more. Like, what's sort of the argument? And he was like, well, you know, on the charging front, we do use a Tesla style port, so you can use those chargers. So that's something. And I was like, okay. And a lot of this, you know, the core offering was based on this idea of entertainment and in-car stuff, which, you know, Sony obviously being a big movie studio, in addition to having PlayStation, all this stuff, you know, they were saying you would be able to stream PlayStation 5 games from the car, although notably a lot of people think this included like PlayStation 5 capability in the car. It didn't. You still needed one. You know, a lot of it was based on that. But I think that whole thing is a differentiator. Is in 10 years maybe matters a lot more if like the car's autonomous and you are just driving down the road playing PlayStation. Like, that's something. But in the current world where like all you could do is use those features while parked, and it was like, I don't know, it had native Crunchyroll support to watch anime in the car, which like for some people is cool, but this thing was going to be $80,000 to $90,000, and in a very quickly shrinking segment. I mean, especially the sedan, where when I counted last year, there were seven competitors, like the, you know, Lucid Air, the Mercedes EQS, the BMW i7, you know, all those things. And like, none of these are super big sales successes, certainly not enough to underpin a whole company. And then when you add in the
they all are better cars than what the Sony
was. They all charge faster, have more range, like all these things. And like, they also are all of these companies are saying they're going to have AI and autonomy and all these things. But unlike, you know, Sony, they have a demonstrated competency in that, right? Like, Mercedes has cars on sale that have an AI assistant that is relatively good. They have a lot of experience with developing, active driver or advanced driver assistance systems. And like, Sony was basically saying, we're going to come in late and have level 3 autonomy quickly and get to level 4 quickly and also have the best in-car AI and all the best software. And just the demo I got was very unimpressive. The car, the UI was terrible, which is not surprising if you know Sony products. And it just, I couldn't really see why this would exist. I mean, cars like the Porsche Taycan that are a lot more sophisticated than this are struggling to justify themselves. And I think it was the right move to kill it. With a lot of EV startups, I'm wondering, like, is this vaporware? Are they really going to be able to make this? This was the opposite, where I was like, well, clearly they can make this. I mean, it's clearly a lot of companies could make. Yeah, and also just like, it's not, there's nothing on the menu that is not already widely available.
Right.
So I was very confident they could make it, and it was more just like, why would they? And
they didn't think we stop have our answer. To ask if they should.
Yes. Yeah. Your scientists were so worried. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I agree. I think they first revealed, Sony first revealed an EV concept. It was kind of like a shocker in 2020 at CES.
Yeah.
Then a couple of years later, they announced that they were going to link up with Honda and do this. And it turns out that just like that interim period, right? Like, maybe had they come out with this in 2020.
Yeah.
Maybe they could have put themselves on the map in this like super rapidly growing EV market as this like high tech player. It turns out that waiting until 2026, like what, 7 years, it was just going to land at probably the worst time it could have,
yeah.
Right? In a time when there's a lot of really good competition, there's not the regulations or the incentives to kind of prop up an early company like that. So yeah, I mean, it's one of those where it's not a shocker that
yeah.
they canceled it. And I think what's interesting is like, I mentioned the Apple car, like you look at other markets, you look at China, and there's a very deep collaboration between tech and auto. And there are even like, there are tech companies like Xiaomi that are just fully going hard into cars and in a very successful way because people know them. People already have their other like gadgets in their house because they know how to build like great technology and UI. And so you can see how a tech company car could be successful if done the right way.
Yeah.
We kind of don't, you know, I think the closest we have is like Google is doing a lot in
yeah.
cars, but I wonder whether we're going to ever have, you know, that sort of Xiaomi moment in
yeah.
America where you just have like, this is a car that's essentially from a tech company or like a joint venture
yeah.
between a tech company and a car company that just brings those two worlds together.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you were saying about like, oh, you know, a company like Xiaomi showed that this is possible. I think that was sort of the impetus for this, of seeing the collaboration in China between these companies.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think the approach to it was just a little simplistic and like not really looking at like, okay, why did this work? And it was like, because you actually are elevating this experience. You're taking the tech approach of move fast. And I think that's so central of like Xiaomi, like came to market quickly and then expanded to other cars. And now they just already facelifted a car that's only been on sale for 2 years. And the facelift is like, you know, 800 volt across the board and new suspension design, more
yeah.
range, cheaper pricing, just like everything. And I think that's just such a core lesson we've learned from Chinese companies and also Tesla at first, maybe not as much these days, is like you have to move faster. You have to keep upgrading, keep adding, keep improving. And I think one of the challenges for the Sony Honda thing was like part of why public opinion, or not public opinion, but expert opinion. Like I've talked to other journalists over the last year, and anytime this company has come up, it's like, are they really still planning on doing this? Because they've been talking about it for 6 years and the specs have only gotten less competitive over time. And it's like, if you were going to do this, the benefit of a tech company is to move fast and really deliver a world-class experience. And like, I don't think Sony has the same institutional competencies as Xiaomi does. Like they're just building different products for different groups. That's why Sony has never cracked the smartphone market, right? Like they just don't really make...
Yeah.
things that feel super slick. Like in my experience with a lot of Sony products that I love, you know, it's just that actual user experience part is sort of the weak link. And that is where a company like Xiaomi, which knows how to make a really polished flagship device, brought that to the tech sector or to the EV sector in China. And it really worked. And they also brought a bunch of new ideas. And I just didn't really see that. I mean, the new idea was like PlayStation games streaming, which is cool, but like, conceptually, there just wasn't a lot here that wasn't already being offered in a really crowded segment where like a lot of people are struggling to make any money. So I think this was the right call. It's just, I do wish we had that real deep
yeah.
partnership because I think we do need that. I don't think people realize how much of like any legacy car company that has decent software is often built on the back of Google stuff. Like my car uses the Play Store and Google Maps and all these things. And like, Tesla even, like, they don't, but then they still use Google Maps at their core. So, like, the tech companies are very involved in our car industry, but the actual application of tech-forward design just hasn't quite caught up there.
Yeah. I feel like Sony just doesn't have the same kind of, it's in everybody's pocket, like, quality
yeah.
that Apple does. I think the
yeah.
one that could really pull it off, and probably actually quite successfully, obviously, building a car company is really freaking hard, as we've seen
yeah.
with all these startups. But Apple has tons of money. It has tons of extremely loyal and rich fans who will buy whatever they put out to like start them out in this. I can imagine things like a Sony car. Okay, great. It integrates with your PlayStation. Cool. Apple car, where you can be on your phone and go to Find My and, you know, you see where your car is and you have all these like widgets that are super integrated. This is what Xiaomi does. I think that could actually do quite well. But it seems like right now that's
right. I mean,
that's not on the table.
That's the challenge really, right? There's like two companies that make that almost definitely make a product that you have in your home, right? It's Apple and Google. And like, it may be, I mean, in theory, Samsung could do it, although they already have long before Xiaomi, they were in the car business, but in a weird tie up with like Renault and stuff in South Korea, whatever, different thing. But I do wonder at some point, Google just announced this week that they're, you know, expanding Google,
Android Automotive OS.
Right, which is now going to not just handle infotainment, but also more of the car's core features, try to be this baseline of the software-defined vehicle thing.
Yeah.
And I do wonder, like, could Google, I mean, they've never been a hardware company, but like the Pixels are they're not that popular, but they're really well reviewed. I mean, could Google do it? How much would it just compete with Waymo? Like, will there be a Google car that then uses Waymo self-drive? I mean, they have all these pieces. They have the user experience piece. They have that you already are tied into the Google ecosystem piece. They have a clear lead in autonomy. Like, I don't know. Could work.
Yeah. I feel like for now, probably the Google car is Waymo and they're doing great at that. Like, they are pretty much the tech company that's the most, apart from maybe NVIDIA now these days with chips and with self-driving, but like Google is very much taking advantage of the future of the car industry in what looks like a pretty smart way.
Yeah. Moro Casino,
America's social casino. Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Let's move on to Plus Minus, our segment where we talk about who's up and who's down in the EV world this week. Mac, who you got?
Yeah, I got a plus. I want to give it to the Mercedes GLC EV. Andre had our first drive this week and really had glowing things to say about it. Said it wasn't just a great EV, but like really felt like a Mercedes. I got a brief go of that car in the prototype drive where we got to just drive it on some sand dunes outside of Vegas, which was awesome. It was just like, it was just any EV with like 400 horsepower dual motors just ripping it through the sand. It just reminds you how much more engaging and fun it is when you just kind of have infinite power and can just do these huge drifts. But mostly I think it's so important that the luxury companies start getting it right. And with BMW, I always felt like they were on the right track. Mercedes was going off in a weird direction for a minute there. I wasn't sure if they were going to pull it back, but it seems like they're nailing it. And I think that's really important in the luxury space specifically, because economically right now, like a gas powered, mainstream car, like a RAV4 is going to be cheaper than an equivalent EV. But in the luxury segment, you know, we're already getting to the point where like, I don't know if an iX3 is as cheap as it looks like it's going to be and goes 400 miles and also is quieter and smoother and faster. Like, it's just going to be a better product, and you're selling it primarily to people who already have single family homes, can figure out the, you know, charging with no issue. And I think like, it just gives me a lot of hope, because it's like, this is what we need to keep the momentum up. Like we don't get regulations, we don't get incentives. So like, what do we have? We have products that are just better than gas cars. And that's the thing I always want to remind people. The reason this is going to win, it's not because we're going to make it win. It's because people like the experience better. EVs are better. And like these cars, I think, are really going to start proving that out.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. I saw an interesting stat the other day. This is from JD Power, basically kind of pointing to this idea that, yeah, things are very much still moving in the right direction, or at least, you know, electrification is pretty strong in the premium and luxury segment. It was about a quarter of, in February, EVs made up about a quarter of the high-end segment in the US, which is like huge.
Yeah.
And then it was like low single digits for mainstream cars. But it just goes to show, between the new GLC, like I mentioned, there's a new GLB that I like forgot even existed. Yeah. The premium brands are not slowing down at all. Like they're coming out with really great technology that will someday trickle down probably.
Yeah. Like good example of that, our Rivian R1S is like the best-selling car in its segment, including the gas options in California. So like, you know, in a market that's obviously much more EV curious than the rest of the US, but like still it's like, it is outselling Escalade, like the not Escalade IQ, gas Escalade. And like, that's a huge deal. Cause like, if I had $100,000 to drop on a car, of course it would be an EV. Like I want the smoothest, quietest, fastest experience. Like, and yeah, you can get super long range at that. When you're at like $30,000, then I get people being like, okay, I want a Ford Maverick over a Chevy Bolt or something. Like, okay, that makes sense to me, right? There's a lot more competition down there, but in the $100,000 range, to me, there's a clear lead in EVs. $80,000, there's a lead in EVs. And then like when you get down to 60, 50, then you start seeing more competition from the gas cars. But I just think once this luxury thing takes over, then EVs are the aspirational choice. And then it's just like, well, I'm going to want one even, you know, regardless. So I think people are going to quickly realize this is just a better, quieter, nicer experience.
Yeah. And I found the exact stats, so I'll just read that out. This was last month. It said year to date, EVs represented over 26.4% of premium car sales, which is like huge.
Yeah.
Mass market, 1.9%, down from 4% the year before. So like, yeah, you're seeing very much this kind of you know, K-shaped right thing where still pretty strong in the premium. On that same note, I have another, I guess I didn't realize we both are doing Mercedes.
But, yeah, I just noticed that too.
It works. My plus is the Mercedes Maybach VLS, which is a super high-end luxury electric van that Mercedes is bringing out. We just saw like a teaser of it this week. Hopefully we'll see more soon. But this is supposed to be like, you know, the ultimate car to be driven in.
Yeah.
It's a Maybach van. I mean, it's so strange. I'm glad that Mercedes is making it and that they're like continuing to, you know, roll out cool EVs this year.
Maybach minivan, man. What a world. We are so back. I am so stoked about that. Like, it's just like, that's the shit. Like, we can do interesting new ideas in the EV transition. I like just people remembering that. And I don't know if we can make minivans cool again, but if anyone can, Maybach maybe. I'm excited to do our shootout between that and the Faraday X Super One sometime next year.
Yeah, exactly. Which one do you think will be better?
Yeah, hard to know.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. We'll be back next Friday. Today's show was produced by Michael Perkins and is brought to you by the Motorsport Network. Make sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to the Inside EVs YouTube channel and check out all our latest coverage on InsideEVs.com. See you next time.
Heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.